Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNRadio.com/Behind the Badge.
It won't be long before we'll all be there with snow.
This is what I was waiting for.
Snow.
I had to start the show off with this today.
My hands, my face, and hair with snow.
Dear Bingle. Bing Crosby.
Snow.
Danny Kaye. Rosemary Clooney. Vera Ellen. From the White Christmas movie.
You know what I found yesterday? I was out and around because it was record store day yesterday.
Oh, right. Vinyl record store day.
Vinyl record store yesterday.
Where's a record store?
Oh, I was up at Dave's Records on North Clark Street.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, yeah.
And
these vintage stores
are very busy, and I was delighted to see that. But they not only have vinyl, you know, 33 and a third or 45, I found some 78 RPM records.
Did you buy any?
No, I didn't buy any 78s.
Did you buy any 45s or... what was the other one?
I got a Miles Davis
45s
album.
45s or 33?
Yeah, 33. I got a Miles Davis album.
Oh.
But
can you tell the difference between the vinyl and other venues?
It depends on how well the digital quality of a CD or an MP3 file is. Sometimes you can, sometimes...
I cannot.
You know, yeah.
Sometimes. I can't tell the difference. Andy, can you?
Yeah.
You have young ears.
Yeah, there's a little bit of a difference in the higher end of the record and the as opposed to the CD or the MP3. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you say the higher end, you mean like the trebles
and the mids, yeah.
Cymbals, a trumpet.
Oh, listen to you two talking like engineers.
Hey, how you doing?
Yeah, but some of the lower frequencies may not transfer as well as digital information is
lost. Oh boy, here it comes.
You started it, remember that.
Here it comes.
No, getting
I just
back
meant
to
if it sounds if it sounds different, if it sounds better.
It does sound a little different.
I know to a lot of people it does. To my ears that have been wearing headphones at a way too loud volume
for 50 years
for way too long, I can't tell the difference anymore. I'm lucky I can barely hear you talking right now.
But getting back,
I'm one step away from replacing Walter Jacobson in those hearing aid commercials.
But you know what I found on a 78? You just played Bing Crosby. I found Jingle Bells with Bing Crosby and the Andrews Sisters.
I don't know who those are. Are they in BTS? Are they in the group BTS at all?
No.
Because that's all I'm into right
BTS.
Now.
BTS? How about BS and T?
How about BS? That's what we mostly have around here.
Between now and 11:30, yes.
You know, BTS is the group they were on Saturday Night Live last night. They're the K-pop group, the Korean boy band.
That's right.
Cake pop?
K-pop.
Oh, K-pop.
Like the letter K for Korean?
Like K-tel.
Pop. Yeah, put it in 70s terms that Shwani will understand. Yeah, it's K-pop. Have you heard any of the BTS?
No.
All right, well, I'll play some for you later on.
All right.
You sound thrilled.
That's fine.
You are my grandfather. There's hibbity-bibbity boy band music.
Kids in your rock music.
Oh, kids in your K-pop Korean music. Back in my day, we never played that.
We listened to Bing Crosby and the Andrews.
78 RPM records.
No one knows what RPM stands for anymore, do they?
Because nobody knows what records are anymore.
Well, a lot of people did yesterday.
Nobody knows what they are. It's revolutions per minute.
That is correct.
You put the needle on the record, as the song used to go. You know, it goes round and round. The disc goes round and round on the turntable. Kids is what Uncle Dean used to play on the radio back in the day, and the number of times that the record would go around in a minute,
per minute,
was the revolutions per minute.
That is right.
RPMs.
That is right.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, now, hopefully people under the age of 80 can understand what we're talking about.
We didn't talk about inner groove modulation distortion yet.
We're going to get to that after 11:30 this morning. We're
gonna, no, you're not. I got a pregame show to get to at that
special,
point.
Whole hour special that Chwani's going to do by himself.
That'll be on the B channel.
After 11:30 today. You know, we
a
are
a podcast
gonna,
that no one will listen to.
That's right. We are going to talk about the weather, and we're going to go to meteorologist Mike Hamernick with that. And as I had mentioned with Rick Pearson before the show started, we have got my one-on-one interviews with the stars of the upcoming Star Wars movie, Star Wars 9. This is going to be the final Star Wars film, is what they're saying, Rise of Skywalker. And I was there when they revealed it, and I'll tell you all about that. It was quite amazing. But those one-on-one interviews, you'll hear them exclusively right here on WGN. My one-on-one interview with director J.J. Abrams, Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, Anthony Daniels, C-3PO himself, many of the other stars of the new Star Wars Episode 9, Rise of Skywalker, which was revealed at Star Wars Convention at McCormick Place on Friday. It continues through tomorrow. We thought it would be a good week to have our pal Mike Morrissey in here, who is the creator of a number of comics series. His debut novel was called Black Star Renegades. It came out last year, and he's got another novel that will be coming out very soon. But in addition to all of that, Mike writes for Lucasfilms. He contributes to StarWars.com and has released a Star Wars comics anthology over the past couple of years. Mike, you must be about as thrilled as everyone else over there at McCormick Place that all of this is going on in your hometown, right?
Oh, I'm having the time of my life. This has been special and just exhilarating.
Yeah, what's it like for you to, I mean, you're part of this universe. It's mind-blowing to me when I'm there that, I mean, it's, you know, one of the great movie franchises of all time, in movie history, mm-hmm. without a doubt. But what it's become, and that it's able to maintain a convention like this, is mind-blowing to me.
Yeah, I mean, you think of, like, C2E2 was here a few weeks ago, and it was, you know, probably arguably as big, but C2E2 encompasses many, many
everything.
Things. Everything. This is one thing. And it's remarkable that it's so powerful and strong 42 years later, yeah. As strong as ever.
Yeah, what were the highlights for you? You were there with your kids the other day, so when I was there on Friday, and, you know, we're working and dragging around cameras and all that sort of thing, but I was really enjoying families that were there together. They were in costume. The parents were enjoying it as much as the kids were. I mean, it was just a really lovely family event. I imagine your family that's so steeped in the world of Star Wars and comics that it's got to be like super fun.
Yeah, this is the first time they've actually done something like this with me.
How old are your kids now?
7 and 4.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah, it's a good age. I feel like they're ready. And they went in costume. They're both clone troopers.
Nice.
Which is their favorite thing.
Were you in costume?
No, you know,
Mike,
I was. I know. I feel so disappointed in myself. My Jar Jar costume just wasn't ready.
Well, if you were going to be Jar Jar, then I excuse you from that.
I would have. I'll tell you what.
You made the right choice. You made the right choice.
But no, it's fun to, you know, I was there Friday, just my brother and I, and that was like the pure just doing all things we want to do, being on the nine panel. But then going with them and seeing it through their eyes and just the wonder and awe at every single thing that they saw was... it was just so much fun. It reminds me of why I love it so much.
Right, right. I think that's part of it for me, too, that it's the nostalgia. Mm-hmm. There is a very, you know, going back to an innocent time of when those first Star Wars movies came out and how great they were because they were so exciting and kind of spoke to the child in you. Mm-hmm. But now generations have passed this, you know, down, and grandparents were there with their grandkids. And it's become a multi-generational kind of thing that's so much fun.
Yeah, which is what the kind of movies I love about these new movies, like the passing baton. And I see so many young girls dressed up as Rey and kids dressed up as Finn. And you see the new stories and the new generation, it's taking hold in them the way it took hold in us. And it's just, that's really, really nice to see. I love seeing that. I love seeing this evolution.
Yeah, without a doubt, the highlight of the convention will be that 9 panel that you called it, revealing the title of episode 9 and then revealing that teaser trailer. I was also in that session. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I've ever experienced anything like that. First it was Stephen Colbert hosting it, who is hilariously funny,
yeah,
and is such a huge fan that made it so much more enjoyable. Mm-hmm. But with J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy, the director and producer, with Anthony Daniels, with Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac,
Billy D. Williams. Who is just Lando.
Stephen Colbert asked him what it was like getting back into the Lando character, and he said, Lando never left me. In that cool Billy D. Williams way that brought the house down.
Oh, it was great.
But what was your, when they showed the trailer, what was your reaction to that?
Because
I almost start crying. I'm not going to lie.
No, I was the same. I had chills. I had chills. And I didn't think that would happen, you know, because I got in there. The moment I got in there, my brother Rick and I, and we were both like, I can't believe it. I can't believe we're here. I can't believe this is happening. And as it continued to evolve, and they're bringing out all these people, and they show the trailer, and then when Palpatine came out, I know his real name, but he's just Palpatine.
Right.
When Palpatine came out,
yeah.
I almost just passed out.
You're right. He came out and said, one more time.
Yeah.
And they played the trailer again. The crowd went wild. To be in that group collective for something like that is something I will never forget for the rest of my life.
No, same here. It was magical. And but that's the power of it. You know, like everyone's unified there and everyone's just in love with this thing and embracing it so wonderfully. And you feel it in the room.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's kind of it's a beautiful friendship, fraternity. I don't know how to describe it, but I mean, the fans are all into it, and it's just kind of wonderful for everyone. How does this play into you writing for Star Wars?
You know, it's funny because I'm purely a fan. You know, when I go, like, I do write. You know, now it's canonical Star Wars, which is daunting to me and intimidating, but awesome. But like, as I was sitting there, like, I'm like, this is purely a fan thing. And I was walking around Saturday and Friday. Like, I didn't have any, usually these kind of conventions, I have so many work obligations, but I only have that tomorrow. So I was going just purely as a fan, and just, I loved that more than anything, just going to enjoy it and be passionate about it and love it. And yes, I love writing it, yeah. And I can't believe
does
I
it inspire to being something like this. Does it inspire you for ideas? And
well, that's all I want to do now.
Yeah, yeah. Just want to go home and write.
Yeah, that's all I want to do is write Star Wars right now. I mean, I usually am like 90% there, but now I'm 100%.
I can imagine how it must. You've also written for Suicide Squad, Green Lantern, Wonder Woman. Flash, Superman, just to drop a few names. What else are you working on right now? You've got your new novels coming out pretty soon, right?
Yeah. Oh, it just came out on Tuesday.
Oh, great.
Yeah, We Are Mayhem, which is like the sequel to Black Star Renegades, which is basically Star Wars by another name, more or less. So I have that, working on the next book, which won't be part of the series, working on a sci-fi series called Wasted Space.
Mm-hmm.
And I just finished a new DC graphic novel for their YA line, a Nightwing story, which should be coming out in about a year, I think.
Yeah. Are you excited about Avengers Endgame that's going to be coming out?
Yeah, very excited. Very excited.
Wow, listen to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
like an understated, like you're going to faint if you talk about it.
I might faint watching it long.
Yeah, well, it might pass out.
Yeah, I know.
It's like 3 hours 15, I heard, something like that.
Yeah, wow. It's going to be, and no break, so we're going to, fatigue is going to set in.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I'm excited. I'm excited to see how they're going to have to reverse the Thanos snap somehow, but I'm interested to see how they do it.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's got to be so much fun for you, right? To be in this world. I mean, most of us just sit back and enjoy it. You know, we read it. We sit back in a chair in a theater. We watch it over and over and over again in some cases. But how cool for you. What is the process of developing this? You get an idea. Do you go to an editor? Do you write up a, you know, a draft, and somebody says, "Yeah, I like this. Take this in. Leave this in. Take this out." How does that work?
Well, a lot of times now it starts at the top. Like, for instance, with Star Wars, with Lucasfilm, they had their idea. What I wrote was this Flight of the Falcon series, and they had this initiative of the Flight of the Falcon. So, like, okay, we want to do this story that's telling the story, the journey of the Falcon from, you know, just a little bit past Solo, the Solo movie, past Last Jedi. So they came to me and said, this is what we want to do. These are your markers, and think of ideas within this context. And that's a lot of times what's happening, you know, especially, you know, you in DC with Batman, Superman, whatever. You're kind of working within the framework because there's so much, you know, as you know, it's seeped in so much continuity, the comics, the, you know, everything, the whole universe. So it's a lot of collaboration of what they want and then what you can. The trick is then, okay, you have this framework of what you have to do, and now adding your own take, your own voice within that framework. So you have to, I don't want to say compromise, be flexible to deliver what they're looking for, but also be able to contribute what you want to do to it.
It's one of the things I talked with J.J. Abrams about, and we're going to play that back at around 10:30. He's got the daunting task now. This is supposed to be the final chapter of Star Wars. And how does he make it a solid movie by itself, that stands all on its own, but makes sense in context with the previous movie that was directed by Rian Johnson, but also the continuity that you're talking about with the other 8 films that have come before it?
Yeah.
That's an amazing process that they've been working on for years and years and years.
I know. It's definitely, I would imagine, daunting. I mean, but J.J. is so good at it. J.J. is the master of kind of what I was describing, taking what's there and then adding something new to it. You know, that's what he did with Force Awakens. You know, it was all the things we loved about Star Wars, but also introducing, okay, here's Rey and here's Finn and here's BB-8 and Poe. And he is able to blend the nostalgia that we are all looking for, but also evolve it in subtle ways at the same time. And it's not easy, but he does it arguably better than anybody, I would say.
The movie's going to be out around Christmas time. Mm-hmm. Your new project, The Throwaway, is... that's your novel, right?
Oh yeah, that's one of them. Yes,
The Throwaway, that's coming out in June, and the sequel to Black Star Renegades, that's out now, right?
Yes, yeah.
And how do we get more information about any of this? Good way to do that.
Yeah, I mean, my website is michaelpmorisi.com. I'm on Twitter at Michael Morisi. All the books are on Amazon or your local bookstore. Okay. Hopefully.
Are you going back to the convention today?
Not today. Today I'm going to try to recharge, but I'm back tomorrow. I have a Lucasfilm panel at 2 o'clock talking about the IDW comics and what we've done and what's coming next.
Thanks for stopping by.
Oh, thanks for having me.
It's great to see you, Mike. Chicago's got the Star Wars fever. Star Wars conventions have been going on at McCormick Place since last Thursday. It'll continue through tomorrow. This is like Comic-Con. This is the biggest collection of Star Wars memorabilia, fans, merchandise, autographed booths, you name it, Star Wars. It's there at McCormick Place. It really is something, and I think all the days have been sold out. I believe some tickets are still available for tomorrow. But Friday was the biggest day there. That was the day of the Episode 9 reveal, where in the Wintrust Arena there, I think 7,000 people, I heard, were on hand as Stephen Colbert hosted a Q&A with the film's director, J.J. Abrams, producer Kathleen Kennedy, and its stars Billy Dee Williams, Daisy Ridley, John Boyega, Oscar Isaac, Anthony Daniels, C-3PO. Many of the other stars were in the film, were all up on stage, and the crowd went wild to hear the filmmakers and the fans. And then they showed the trailer of Star Wars Rise of Skywalker. We've got it up on the WGN website, so you can take a look at it if you'd like. It's all over the internet. You can't miss it if you're interested in taking a look at that. But after all of this hoopla in the Wintrust Arena, We met up with the cast afterwards, and we had some fantastic one-on-one conversations with them. Let's start off with J.J. Abrams, who is the director of this fantastic motion picture. Talk to us a little bit about it, and we got a nice WGN shout-out from him as well.
Being back in Chicago is such a treat, and as a fan of the city, as a fan of WGN, as a fan of Star Wars, you know, it's sort of a weird perfect storm. I think, you know, being out there with those, you know, lightsaber-wielding, screaming fans reminds us who have been in an editing room for a long time, and before that, these stages, you know, to be with thousands of people who are in this moment, you know, making you undeniably realize how much it means to them is such a beautiful thing, and I feel very lucky, and it's mostly surreal, to answer your question. I can't believe I get to be up there even right now talking about it. It's a very odd thing that I still feel that I'm part of this remarkable universe that George created.
I can only imagine what kind of complexity and creativity is involved in putting this all together so it makes sense with all nine movies, so it makes sense with the last movie, so it makes sense by on its own, and still be the final act for this piece of movie history.
No, you've nailed it. I mean, the biggest challenge of this movie was having it be both its own thing, a standalone thing, and also to be able to incorporate, synthesize, acknowledge, embrace everything that's come before. And sometimes, you know, we did a lot of work to make sure that that was happening as well as it could. It's obviously going to be up to you to decide if we achieved our ambition, but it's been a thrill to do it. I could not feel luckier, literally could not feel luckier, to get to be working on this thing. And as hard as it is, it's always more fun than it is tiring.
I felt like you were a little bit emotional when you were talking about Carrie Fisher, who is included in this movie, that you could have CG'd like a lot of films do and bring them back that way. But it sounds like you, in such a loving way, wanted to include her, felt like she must be included in this final.
It's so odd that how that happened. I mean, you know, obviously we loved her, and it's heartbreaking she's not here, and still weird that she's not here with us today. But I will say that the fact that we had these scenes that we hadn't used, the fact that there were these performances, these moments from Carrie that are her, that we were able to incorporate almost as if we were doing just a reshoot on something, and like adding a line from another character here, that it's uncanny, honestly. So
it's like meant to be, sort of, right?
I will tell you, there's a very odd thing that you can't work on this movie and get in that, you know, editing room and look at these scenes and not feel like somehow that's the case. It's very strange.
Yeah, he talked about Carrie Fisher. She's part of the trailer. You get a quick glimpse of her from that previously unused footage that he's talking about. It's a scene, as a matter of fact, with Rey, the new heroine of the saga, played by Daisy Ridley. And when she was walking the red carpet and we got a chance to talk with her, she told me how she had an opportunity to actually enjoy some of the city.
We been to Roscoe's. We did a little, we tried to do a bar crawl, and then I didn't have my ID, so we had to leave.
Wait a minute, you got carded and they wouldn't serve you?
Yeah, and he was like, you can't come in. I didn't have my ID, it's totally my fault.
Wow.
We went on an architectural boat tour.
Nice.
Seen quite a bit of the city. It's wonderful. We're going to Steppenwolf, I think, this weekend.
Very nice. Wow, you're actually getting to enjoy the city. That's a good little sampling of the city.
Yeah.
When we've spoken before, I've asked you how your life had changed since becoming part of this phenomena. But what I'm wondering about now is how the evolution of making these films has changed for you since you've got a few under your belt.
I'd say the main difference probably is I'm more confident, and I'm more... The first one was such a whirlwind, I can't really like remember a lot of it. And the second one was also a whirlwind because it was emotional and it was just like crazy and the film would just come out and everything. This one I just felt very present. I was like, I get what's going on. There were obviously struggling days, but in a general sense, I just felt more like, you know, like in my right spot, you know? It was nice.
After being part of a franchise like this, do you just want to do independent films, little projects? I mean, is there a downside to being part of the biggest film franchise in the world?
No. I mean, the one thing is it takes a lot of time. But that's not a bad thing because I got that. I think No, I'm not like, oh, I want to do this, I don't want to do that. I've been so lucky, like I really have. And I think you could have a great time on a small film or a big film, and I've had a great time on three big films. So basically just working with awesome people.
I'm so happy to see you're enjoying it so
Thank
much.
You.
It's nice to see you. There is Daisy Ridley, who plays Ray in the features. Coming up next, Anthony Daniels, the great C-3PO, and John Boyega and Oscar Isaac and more of our one-on-one interviews with the cast of Star Wars, The Rise of Skywalker, the final chapter, episode 9. It's all coming up next, WGN. Coming up tomorrow morning on the WGN-TV Morning News, we're enjoying these interviews with the cast of Star Wars, episode 9, The Rise of Skywalker, but you'll actually be able to see the interviews. I'm going to feature them for you tomorrow morning on Chicago's number one WGN-TV Morning News.
Destroys the show. This is madness. We're doomed. R2-D2, where are you? At last. Where have you been?
What are we going to do? We'll be sent to the spice mines of Kessel, smashed into who knows what.
Don't you call me a mindless philosopher, you overweight glob of grease. What plans? What are you talking about?
One of the most beloved characters in the whole Star Wars
this thing is safe?
Franchise. C-3PO. I believe that Anthony Daniels is one of the few actors that has been in every single one of the 8 movies thus far, and he is also featured in episode 9 as well. He's one of the great Star Wars actors that we talked to following the big presentation at McCormick Place this past Friday, the great CPO, Anthony Daniels. You, more than just about anybody else in this cast, must have a kind of perspective of the kind of reception that you get and the kind of enthusiasm that fans have for this. How would you describe that?
It is the... to walk out on stage and see a portion of the world's fan base and to have them do this thing, the weird thing, you have a clapping, and to hear them cheering. And it's almost a physical thing that comes across the stage front there. We don't have footlights anymore, but you used to say over the footlights. It is so life-enhancing because as a performer, you do give out a lot. And one of the things at an event like this is the fans have an opportunity to say thank you. And I have met certain stars that I've just said, thank you. Mm-hmm. And that's all you can say, because you're not going to... I mean, you'd be crazy if you say, you know that bit where you did this? Yeah. No, it's not about that. Yeah. It's about... it's my time to say, ding, ding, thank you.
I appreciate the joy that you've given me. That sort of thing, right?
Yes. And all I say is thank you. And, yeah. and thank you for the support and love.
Yeah.
Because the fans are very loving, not in a silly, crass yeah. way. They genuinely give of themselves. You know, whatever their daily life is, Star Wars, for some magical reason that we don't yeah. totally get, they have put themselves into it and they give back.
Yeah. It's my observation that it's profound and it's overwhelming and sincere when they say that, and especially yeah. to you, to C-3PO. What do you think the special affection is for this character?
I think if people are fond of Trujillo, it's because basically he's incredibly vulnerable. He's all hoity-toity telling everybody what to do, but actually underneath it, he's really quite scared, and he's nervous for people, he's nervous for himself, you know. He doesn't quite get humanity. He's almost there. And I think people sense that they need to take care of him a bit. You know, he's fussy and he's irritating, but his heart, if he had one, would be in the right place.
Yeah. Well, thank you. As you were saying before, thank you so much for everything. What a treat to talk with him. And doesn't he even sound like C-3PO in real life? And I mean that as the greatest compliment ever. Anthony Daniels, one of the newer actors in the franchise, is John Boyega, who plays Finn in the series. And he was just full of energy after the big reveal of the new trailer.
It was amazing. It was amazing going up there and showing the fans some stuff.
What's that feeling like when, you know, I don't know how many thousands of people were in there showing their adoration like that? I mean, the city's going crazy.
What's so funny is that in a film like this, you don't really get the opportunity on most other films to do a teaser trailer release with in a stadium. And it just shows how different this film is and how much people connect to it in such an amazing way. And for me to be able to be a part of it, it's just amazing to feel that nostalgia.
Yeah. The first time that we talked to you for the first film, mm-hmm. and then since then, I asked you how your life had changed. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering how just the evolution of making these movies now for you? Has it changed?
Yeah, definitely. Episode 9 came at a very interesting time for me, especially in doing projects back to back and coming home. It felt like rest, and that's the first time filming has felt that way. And I guess the third one is the final, but the third one is when everybody got their comfort and their rhythm. So I'm gonna miss these guys as well. Being a part of it and being together for so long, nine months, it was amazing.
Yeah. It's great to see you.
Thank you. Great to see you.
John Boyega, who is Finn in the movie. Oscar Isaac plays Foe, and I really kind of put it into perspective, talking about this in a more philosophical way and what the Star Wars saga represents in a bigger sense.
I think it's just a great reminder because, look, I mean, you can get cynical about anything. You know, it's like, and we're very adaptable creatures as humans, and so anything can become feel like it's normal, you know, and getting the Millennium Falcon every day and shooting a scene, it's like, here I gotta punch my card in and do this again. And so to come back and to see the footage, that behind the scenes footage of the early films of A New Hope and Empire, and to really feel the cinematic lineage of this, and then to feel like the physical feeling of the wave of excitement and energy from that 7,000
direct feedback.
Yeah, exactly. It's just right? Yeah, you realize.
And you guys did seem giddy every time they put a still picture up on the screen.
Yeah,
you guys haven't seen all that stuff.
No, we haven't seen any of this stuff. So I mean, I saw the teaser trailer last night for the first time. Learned what the title was last night for the first time. So
crazy.
Yeah. It's. I feel like I'm on the ride just like everybody else is.
Yeah, it's always great to see you.
Let's go out with something really hot for these folks. A big hit out of 77. Star Wars. Nothing but Star Wars. Give me the Star Wars.
The great Bill Murray. Our one-on-one interviews with the cast of Star Wars 9. Rise of Skywalker. We'll have much more between now and Christmas when the movie will open. We'll show you the interviews tomorrow morning on the WGN TV Morning News. And we'll update weather and news all coming up next on WGN.
Let my people go.
Slaves are mine. Their lives are mine. All that they own is mine. I do not know your God, nor will I let Israel go.
Who are you to make their lives bitter in hard bondage? Man shall be ruled by law, not by the will of other men.
The great Charlton Heston.
Who is this?
Telling the story of Passover, the holiday observed by Jewish people, that will start at sundown this coming Friday, April 19th, the holiday to commemorate the story of God liberating the ancient Israelite people out of Egyptian-imposed slavery. Shout out to Yul Brynner in that clip as well. Let my people go, the famous line by Moses. Just a small portion of the journey of the Israelite people from bondage to salvation. And this is what the Jewish people have been retelling and celebrating for generations with Passover that lasts for 8 days, during which no bread or anything that contains grain that has been fermented is to be consumed or even owned. The main focus of the Passover holiday is the ceremonial Seder, a celebratory meal that occurs this Friday and Saturday nights in which family and friends and guests discuss the story of the Exodus through readings and rituals and four cups of wine and symbolic foods. And joining us today to talk about some of those important symbolic foods and what his legendary Chicago restaurant is doing for Passover is Ken Raskin, who is the owner of the Great Manny's Deli. Hi, Ken. Nice to see you.
Hi, Dean. Thanks for having me.
I don't think I've ever seen you. We're not surrounded by corned beef sandwiches.
That's for sure.
All over, because I love coming to Manny's. You've got your Manny's shirt on, which I love. But normally I see you at the restaurant when I'm knee-deep in corned beef sandwiches, and you're serving them to everybody at Manny's. For how long now has Manny's is truly one of the legendary restaurants in Chicago.
Yeah, we've been in the neighborhood for 77 years now.
Wow.
It started with my grandfather and his brother. My dad worked there as a kid, and they had a place on Roosevelt Road, one in Albany Park. one on the west side. Over the years, they closed those, and we opened up on Jefferson Street in 1965.
Yeah, where you are now, right. And still packing them in every single day.
Yeah, well, we've done four expansions over the years, and trying to keep up with the times.
Yeah, what do you think the secret of the success? We're going to talk about Passover in a second, but Manny's is so legendary. What do you think the secret to the success is? As you know, foods have gone through different trends. Great corned beef sandwiches, great pastrami sandwiches, that amazing deli counter that you have, that hot table of great foods and desserts that you have has been, you know, standard for decades.
Well, you know, so many things have changed over the years. All the places that we used to go to basically disappeared. I started dating my wife 44 years ago, and everywhere we went on a date probably within those first 6 months is gone.
Yeah.
So we really are a touchback to what things were.
Do you think it's that people love comfort foods, that they love, that there's something about going to Manny's that brings back a happier time for them, and foods maybe that their parents serve them, that their grandmothers, you know, made for them, their mothers, you know, made for them, do you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, basically we're serving the fifth generation of customers already, and they all refer to their grandparents, their great-grandparents, and, you know, basically their experiences, yeah. And they're trying to figure out how it changed and yeah. Where the walls were and all that.
Right, right. One of the things that strikes me when I come to Manny's is how diverse it is. You have everybody. Every kind of person, male, female, every color, every ethnicity, there's a universal quality that people love about coming to Manny's.
Well, you can get old-fashioned type food, a lot of Middle European entrees, you know, and people come to get their fix, and it's just so interesting to see what it's like, and you know, if you have an experience, you know, people, you want to come in and see what it's all about.
Yeah. So talk to me a little bit about Passover and Manny's. You've got a special Passover menu just for the holidays,
right? We do. It's got quite extensive, actually. It has a lot of our regular items that we serve every day, but they're featured and right out in front on this menu. Basically, you could get all the fixings for your family dinner to serve at home without cooking. People place their order in advance. They come and pick it up. Hopefully, we didn't leave anything out.
Yeah. Grandma's not going to be happy about
that. No, you can't do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't brand the piece of gefilte fish with the Manny's logo on it, but you know, we don't need to be recognized in that meal.
Are the foods that you have on your Passover menu, those are the items which are on the traditional items that one would find on a Seder table?
Absolutely. Everywhere from gefilte fish to chopped liver, matzo ball soup, the cirrhosis, all the items that are on a Seder plate. And we can get into that if you... Well, I want to talk about the symbolism.
I'm curious to, you know, to find out about it. I mean, you know, for Christians, today is Palm Sunday, but I like learning about other religions and traditions, and to me, that's what makes Chicago so great, is we have such a melting pot here, and I love learning about all of these things. So let me take a break, and when we come back, you can explain all of this to us. We'll come right back. Ken Raskin is here, the owner of Manny's Delis, and we'll be right back on WGN. Ken Raskin is here, who's the owner of Manny's Deli at 1141 South Jefferson in Chicago. The legendary Manny's Deli. I don't think there are any other delis in the Chicago area quite like yours. Well, you know, I always say, you know, when I'm in New York, I like to go to some of the famous delis in New York, which sadly they're even closing in New York right now. The Carnegie and the Stage Deli and some of the big ones there that have been open for years are now gone. And I always say, really, the only place that we have in Chicago, like a New York deli, is Manny's.
Well, thank you for thinking that. I appreciate it. A lot of it has to do with the real estate. If you own your own property, you have a better chance of sticking around, as long as someone doesn't come and offer you $50 million for it.
Yeah.
And the other reason why a lot of them disappeared was a lot of the parents educated their kids. They became doctors and lawyers and other types of professionals. They didn't want them sweating back there in the kitchen and stuff. And so a lot of the kids didn't take over the family businesses.
Mm-hmm. unlike your family, where you do have you do have your family. When I go there, I feel I'm at the Raskin house or something.
Well, pretty much. I'm there more than I'm at home.
Yeah,
and my son works full time. He runs the restaurant pretty much, and my wife Patty runs the deli and bakery. And at least once or twice a week, I have big segments of my family coming in for lunch.
Yeah, well, it's always a nice feeling. With Passover now that will start at sundown this coming Friday, Manny's and many other places around the Chicago area have Passover menus. But Manny's in particular, talk to us a little bit about the significance of the items that you've got on your Passover menu that families can come and pick up everything that they need at Manny's to serve to their families at home.
Okay, well, I'll first start with the Seder plate. It's generally got five items on it. It has cherosis, which is chopped apple, nuts, and wine. That's to represent the mortar and bricks of what the Jews built the pyramids with in Egypt. Horseradish, which symbolizes the bitter life that the people had. We have parsley, and we dip it in salt water, and that's to symbolize the tears of the Jews. And then we have a roasted egg and a roasted lamb shank, and that shows sacrifice to the gods.
Okay.
To God, pardon me, not gods. And then we take the book that's called the Haggadah, and that is the entire story of Passover from beginning to end. And it guides you through the dinner with prayer and explaining the symbolism of the different foods and the traditions that went on. And it's really, really important to the Jewish family to go through this at some level. You know, you could do a 30-minute service, or you could do a 4-hour service.
Yeah. I've had friends tell me that they've sat through those 4-hour ones sometimes. Yeah,
that's pretty rough, especially if you worked all day.
The more traditional families, they do the long version.
Yeah, and one of those things, you're supposed to recline, so lean back at the table. Well, a person like myself would probably fall asleep.
Right, if you were working all day on top of it, right.
Yeah, but it's really interesting, and we go through the beginning part with the Seder plate, and then we demonstrate the 10 plagues that actually got the Jews released.
Mm-hmm.
And then we explained that the matzah is unleavened bread. The Jews didn't have time for the bread to rise, so that's what became matzah.
Right.
And that's basically used as a binder or the bread to eat for the holiday.
Yeah.
It's in most of the items that would require any kind of bread.
Yeah, and the other items that you have on there, are there other traditional foods that are eaten during the Passover period?
Yeah, and I'm not sure that all of them are from that period of time, but the traditional items to eat are things like the filter fish for an appetizer, the matzo ball soup, chopped liver.
Okay.
And we just go on like that. We have all those types of items.
A texter is asking if you are certified kosher.
No, we are not.
Okay.
We don't follow the dietary laws.
Okay. Like some people keep kosher, and they would need that. Others, other Jewish people don't.
Right.
So everybody understands that. If people want to get more information, take a look at your menu, learn more about Manny's history, what's the best way to do that?
Through our website, www.mannysdeli.com.
Okay, mannysdeli.com, and it's 1141 South Jefferson, basically Jefferson and Roosevelt, right?
Yeah.
Roosevelt Road. Ken Raskin, happy Passover to you and to your family.
Thank you.
And thank you for coming in.